final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the West. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
game is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Shaziz here. You're listening to Shaziz Mad Science. If you're into some good health care, go over there to the world-class natural health care supplies, RoxbyHealthSupplies.com. Check out the products that they've got going on over there. It's a really nice looking website, by the way. Anyway, getting on into the mad science portion of the deal, I posted that link in the chat room for www.roxbyhealthsupplies.com over on Shaziz Radio and awakeradio.com. So anybody else wants to pass that around there for some folks to get some good health supplies and stuff, and seems to be quite a bit of information on there. Go over and check it out if you can. With that said, peace and love, everybody. Anyway, Mad Science. So we're talking about alternative energy here over on ShazizRadio.com. We're talking about all kinds of stuff as far as that goes. And if you haven't joined in on the Knights of the Roundtable tomorrow during the same time, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central Time, the Knights of the Roundtable, that's your platform if you want to come over and share something that needs to be said around the world. Anyway, what exactly is alternative energy? Anything outside of the whole fossil fuel system that the green folks keep complaining about all the time, supposedly causing catastrophic weather throughout our entire globe. While I disagree with that entire scenario, I have to say that if you do believe in that type of deal, then you should back all your mad scientists around the world, your alternative energy researchers, and believe me, folks, there is a lot of them out there. The whole secret to free energy, you know, what is it, you know? You know, we're not talking over unity, we're not talking 0 point, we're not talking about trying to get out more than you put in or whatever, you know. We're essentially talking about how to literally learn from nature, which is the best teacher, and take that information that you've learned and use it to get work done. It's as easy as that. All energy, no matter what form it comes in different speeds and different waveforms, different pressures, you know, such as instead of sitting around arguing about what energy really is or whether magnetism's it or whatever, instead of delving into the high-tech terminology, look out there and watch nature and see what nature does. You know, the wind doesn't blow constant all the time in certain areas. It just gusts. And then in other areas, depending on where you're at, it could be a constant wind. But either way, behind that, his waves, there's some pressure going on that you can get some work done with. And I spent many years using what I've learned from nature to determine how to best go about generating electricity. How a person could essentially get off the power grid, like we all keep talking about. You know, we know that we can get energy from the wind. We know we can get energy from the sun. We know we can get energy from the earth. Water flowing down a stream or whatever. There's so many different ways that we can use to take that pressure and mechanically either turn a generator creating a magnetic field or simulate a magnetic field with some current that we've already got via batteries or whatever. It's all waves, energy waves, frequency waves, whatever you want to call them. Leaving all the high-tech terminology aside, just stand out next to the ocean and watch as the waves come in. Never mind what caused those waves to come in, you know, what force was behind those waves that are coming in. All you need to know is that those waves are coming in. And those waves have pressure, they have speed, and a frequency that can be used to do actual work. This is what I've been trying to point out for quite a long time, that, you know, we don't have to sit around and argue over... Alrighty, you're live.
Oh, good morning, dadgummit.
Yeah. Okay, let me finish my thought here. Anyway, we don't have to sit around and argue over the high-tech terminology of what is the energy behind the action that's going on. We know the wind's blowing. We don't have to sit around and debate whether or not what pressure or what force is behind that wind. When you feel that wind pressure in your face, then you know that you actually have physical pressure present. The same thing applies with the ocean out there. As the ocean is sending the waves in, we don't need to sit there and argue over what is the actual force behind the ocean waves. We know that the ocean waves have force and they also have pressure. Same thing with a running stream or river or waterfall. We don't have to argue over where that energy came from or the whole high-tech terminology behind it is pressure. We can see it right there with our own two eyes. We can actually tap into that energy flow that's already in existence. If you study electricity or lightning, can somebody mute their mic for me for a minute, please? If you study lightning and you see that lightning comes, you can either argue that it comes from the ground up, or you can argue that it comes from the sky up. That's neither here nor there. We don't need to sit around and argue that lightning is which direction it's coming from, or what the actual force is behind the lightning coming up. And the rays that are coming from the sun, we don't have to argue whether or not they're different forms of energy or what's going on. All we know is that whenever you are standing out in the sun, you can literally feel heat on your body. There's a form of pressure. You can notice that if you stay out there too long, you get a sunburn. And you know that energy is coming from the sun. What caused the whole thing out there on the sun, all the gases and all the magnetism or whatever is the actual cause of it, is in my mind not worth arguing over. Now, when you talk about energy coming in the forms of waves, in different speeds and different pressures, then now you know that when you get to a certain point, regardless of how you got it to begin with, now you have something that you can get physical work done. How much physical work would be determining on how much pressure you actually have and how frequent the waves are coming in and so on and so forth. So what I've learned in this entire deal, I've done a lot of research in negative ion generators, static generators, electromagnetic generators, permanent magnet motor generators, all types of different generators, all types of different frequency ranges, and I've realized that if you take all these energy waves and you learn something from them, you can store that energy. You can use that energy to actually get work done real time, or you can store that energy. And for the most part, most folks are out there in the alternative energy community. They're pretty much all right with all the different types of ways that they're doing it, because there's such a wide variety of ways that you can utilize this energy. Now, it's debatable whether or not you're ever going to get out more than you put in, because of the laws of physics. As you know, energy can neither be created nor destroyed, and you can never get out more than you put in. Regardless of all that, none of that's either here or there. It's not even worth even debating over. That's for the folks behind the scenes that want to know why it ticks, and then they could debate that on the opposite side. All we know is that whenever a static discharge comes from your finger to your brother's ear, your brother can feel pressure. Your brother can feel an actual work being done. So with that said, I've been able to take a negative ion generator and charge capacitors. I've been able to take a Slayer exciter and charge capacitors. I've been able to take a CB radio transmission and charge capacitors. I've been able to take a wireless Tesla coil, starting off with DC voltage and sending it out through the air, and be able to charge capacitors. I've been able to take a Van de Graaff generator and shoot a static charge with that and charge capacitors. So it doesn't matter. And I've also been able to energize argon gas into the plasma state, and the frequency range out the other side was able to charge capacitors. So it doesn't matter which form the energy comes in. I was able to store it in a capacitor. And a capacitor is, you know, like I said, it's a storage tank. It's a battery. Now, does it have to be stored real time? No, it's just the easiest way that I've found in order to put up enough energy to, let's say, run an LED for a longer period of time instead of a sudden discharge of the capacitor. So, What have we learned from all this? We've learned that it doesn't matter what range the frequency's in, that is energy potential. The faster the energy's coming in, the more frequent the wave comes in, means the higher the potential. And our whole key point was try to figure out ways by which you didn't have to do near as much work in order to get out more energy. Now, when we talk about how our electrical appliances work, we're reliant on a whole lot of current and a whole lot of watts and a whole lot of amps to run a whole lot of stuff. However, using the energy flow that is around us continuously, if we could learn to essentially simulate the reaction that is gotten from a magnetic field, literally simulate a magnet, simulate a magnetic field, which is obvious it has been done because you see how AC motors that don't have permanent magnets in them function. You're literally sending electricity in and you're simulating a magnetic field, which in turn turns on another set of coils, which then in turn turns the shaft and you have an electric motor, an AC electric motor. So already what I'm talking about has already been done. It's just not tuned to the specifics that I'm talking about. However you want to describe magnetism, or however you want to describe pressure or vacuum or any of that other stuff, is irrelevant. Because at the end of all this stuff that we talk about, we all have something, every one of these has something in common, which is the speed of the wave coming in, the wave coming in, the pressure of the wave coming in to get physical work done on the opposite side. Now, if you can do it with a 9-volt battery as opposed to a 12-volt battery, then in my mind, that's a less amount of energy that you had to put in as far as energy on the first side in order to get energy on the opposite side. So a lot of the things that I do in my research have to do with studying how these different waveforms can still be used in order to get a discharge going across to charge up a capacitor. And what I've determined from all the work that I've done, from all the Tesla technology that I've researched, from all the ways that radiant energy works, solar energy and everything, so on and so forth, is the simple of the whole thing is the equivalence of a lightning bolt from the ground to the sky. There's all kinds of mechanical oscillators out there that will determine the frequency of the energy being used on the other side. There's all kinds of solid state oscillators out there that will determine the energy on the other side. Either way, you're taking an energetic force and you are basically tapping out Morse code to tell the other side what you want it to do. The frequency of the wave will determine how fast it's coming in, how much pressure is behind it, and so on and so forth. Now, you can take any battery, doesn't matter what battery it is, and you can turn on a little AM radio and you can tap the terminal on there, connect your positive or your negative, doesn't matter, just connect one of them and tap it on there. Every time you tap that, you will hear that wave on that radio. The same thing with a capacitor. Every single time that a capacitor discharges, you will hear that wave on the radio. So there's something going on there. So what I determined from this entire deal, that the key to alternative energy is literally in the spark gap itself. If you look at the potential of lightning, when lightning discharges from the earth to the atmosphere, or from the atmosphere to the earth, whatever side of the fence you're on that episode right there, it doesn't matter. All you need to know is that when that lightning discharges, you can hear that wave for miles. In not only the form of an acoustic wave from the pressure blowing out or in, whichever side of that fence you're on. But you can hear it on the radio, specifically AM radio, amplitude modulated AM, specifically on AM radio because of the frequency range at what it's in. That's why they went to FM radios. They don't they're not as easy to disrupt. But AM radios, you can pick up the static off of everything, from an electric motor running next to your radio to whatever. Either way, when that discharge occurs, you can hear it on your CB 5 miles away or more, because that sends out a waveform. Every single time you can put your AM radio anywhere near your Tesla coil when it's running off, and every single time that spark gap fires, you'll hear it. Take it as far away as you can until you can't hear it anymore on the radio. You'll notice how far away that wave actually travels out. That wave, that spark gap jumping across there, can actually be timed to literally change the frequency on the opposite side. And so you can literally tune it. You can tune a Slayer exciter, you can tune a Tesla coil, you can tune a Van de Graaff generator, you can tune a Wimshurst generator, just by speeding up and slowing down that discharge going across. The energy input on the, you plug in a Van de Graaff generator, the speed is set at a determined rate, and it will go only so fast according to how fast that motor can turn inside there. Put a variac in between that, or a motor controller, and you can literally turn up the speed on that thing and determine the output of how much energy is being discharged and how frequently it's being discharged on the opposite side. So all we're essentially talking about is the same thing, manipulating whatever it is that you call that energy out there, the magnetism or whatever. All we're doing is either speeding it up, slowing it down. The difference between a microwave and whatever wave else out there you can think about, it's all the same thing. So, how do we get our free energy from this? Well, anything that can be made scaled up can be made scaled down, vice versa. If it works one way, it'll work in the opposite direction as well. So, if you take and learn from everything that nature has to offer from you, trying to bypass the whole back EMF, the cogging effect, and all that kind of stuff, and you want to get the same results on the opposite side without that, in my belief, the spark gap is the way to go. You'll notice that if you look really close, if you look before or after you turn your lights on and off in your house, if you go there and look at the light switch, look down inside there where the actual switch is. And if it's dark in your room and you flip that on, you keep your eye in there, you can literally see before that terminal makes its full contact, you've already got a spark going across there. It doesn't matter whether it's AC or DC. Before that switch ever even makes full contact with the other side of that circuit, the energy potential that's behind that has already forced enough pressure to leap across that gap. And so with that said, whether you're using AC current or DC current doesn't matter. Now, in your eye, you may think that you've actually made physical contact with that before you see that spark, but it hasn't. You haven't touched it yet. It's not made full contact with you. The energy potential, the energy difference from one side to the other will cause that to leap across that gap. Now, if you got a lot of pressure behind there, you can have a super long, wide spark gap, and you got a long time that you can adjust that down to either speed that thing up or slow it down, whichever direction you want to go. So using that knowledge right there, that you can literally tune it. A variable capacitor, it's a tuner. Plasma, used in the right direction, can be a tuner. doesn't matter. It's just like the variac, the potentiometer, the variable resistor, the variable speed controller, whatever. All of them speeding up and slowing down the frequency at which that energy is literally traveling down the wire. Now, I'm saying, instead of wasting all the energy that it takes to create a super strong electromagnetic field, what via either permanent magnets or electromagnets on one side or the other, instead of using that strong electromagnetic field to, by brute force, shake loose those electrons that you send right down the wire itself and stimulate those electrons with the proper frequency to get those electrons to literally create direction where each electron, this field, is coupling with the next one, which is coupling with the next one, and we get our electron flow, which we call electricity. This is what I've been researching in. So, guys, are you there? What's your thoughts on the matter?
I think I forgot to unmute the microphone. I sound a little better there now. Instead of blasting you out, I turn gain down.
Yeah, I'm going to have to turn one volume down.
Yeah.
All right, so what's your thoughts on the matter?
Oh, shoot, yeah. Something about the open spark has quite a lot to do with transmission of energy and getting close to zero point, because I've never seen anything get close to zero point that didn't have some kind of a spark. Also, I mean, if you take an antenna, you make an antenna, just pull out a straight piece of wire one direction and an equal one the opposite direction. If you take 2, 3, 4 divided by the frequency in megahertz that you want to transmit on, 2, 3, 4 divided by that frequency in megahertz will give you your length in feet, and you'll get pretty close around there, and it'll be a wide band because it doesn't really have any filtering, so you'll be bleeding a lot of channels. Say like 27.1195 would be channel 19 on a CB radio.
Let me pause you for a second, because you said something key right there, the bleeding the channels. That's a key right there. Because that's a lot of energy potential if you can literally bleed over into other frequency ranges as well. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, a lot of people think that over-modulating and bleeding all the channels is actually letting you get out better. But for the person that intended to receive, basically, he's not getting but a fraction of the power because you're bled all over the doggone band. But what I was saying with the antenna, if you take just a small battery or whatever, or a larger battery if you want, you take a wire and you scrape it across the vial. One side goes to the negative side, to one side of the antenna. The other side goes to the positive side of the antenna. The 27.185 divided by, 2, 3, 4 divided by the frequency in megahertz. 27.185 comes out to 8'6", pretty close. So that's something you can remember. If you want to get on 19 and send you out an SOS in your location, that's something you can do real easy. So, I mean, just got to remember, just learn how to count 1, 2, 3, 4, skip the 1, and divide that by your frequency, and pull you some wire out, a little battery, and if you're in the jam, you can get out of it, if somebody knows Morse code. But if you don't, then some people, they have a game out there called War Driving, that they usually do on computers and stuff, but and CB radio, they do that too. It's called a hide and seek game that they do. A lot of them are well skilled at it to find out who the heckler is on their channel. And they'll ride around and find out where it's at, especially if they recognize the SOS. So anyway, just keep on doing it. Give them time to find you.
Yeah, they call that triangulation around here.
Yeah, right.
It's easy to find the signal strength when you got two or three people out there triangulating, and they'll go towards the strongest portion of the signal, and then eventually they'll find the center point where that's coming from. So it's pretty cool. You could do it alone, actually, but it's a lot faster when you got multiple people involved.
Yeah. Well, what happens on that, see, the length of the wire that you figured out with the 234 is a quarter wavelength. If you run that straight up off a tin roof without and ground the other side of it, they don't touch. You have what is called a ground plane. If you run one wire out to the left and one wire out to the left, now you have a full half wave. The second half is called the counter. The second quarter is called a counterpoise, which is the same thing. If you shake a, you weigh 150 pounds and you shake a 150 pound ball, they both move about the same direction back and forth. But without the ball, you're just moving your hands and you ain't getting no action out of anything. So that's the counterpoise's job in order to allow the signal to get out. A half wavelength does wonderful.
Well, energy travels in waves, and it doesn't matter what type of energy, whether it be an acoustic wave or a water wave or gas waves in the gas or whatever. All we need to know is not what initially caused that. I mean, it's good to know, but as far as what can you do with it on the opposite side is the key, what I believe, to free energy. And the reason why I believe that the spark gap, not only for what you said, but why the spark gap is going to be the key, is look at lightning. Look at the potential of lightning. You know, and the energy draw that whenever a lightning bolt comes from the ground, it's not just the initial charge that's going on there. You've got something else at play going on there. And it literally creates a draw of energy from the outside, energy potential. And by the time that lightning bolt hits the sky or the earth, whichever direction you want to be on that, I'm one of the ones that believes it comes from the ground up. But that's neither here nor there.
Ground is basically negative polarity. Once in a while, you get some negative clouds, and you get some cloud-to-ground lightning.
Yeah. So however it works...
Not as strong as the ground-to-cloud lightning, because usually that's a positive charge up there.
What you end up with is multiple different forms of energy release when that energy... You get light, visible light spectrums that you can see. You can see the lightning. You've got an acoustic wave that you're going to see. The pressure of the static discharge itself. So there's just three examples of the energy that a lightning bolt creates. And we hadn't even mentioned heat. The temperature in a lightning bolt's got to be flat out incredible, because it can literally melt glass, sand into glass. Now, they call them fulgurites. When the lightning bolt hits the sand, it superheats the sand and turns it into a glass. And if you ever find a fulgurite, hang on to it, because they're, from what I understand, worth quite a bit of money.
Yeah, you got to be real careful removing them, too.
Yeah.
Especially the real fine, the little fine hairs. If you can sit there and kind of just blow the sand away and dig out around it without touching it and just keep blowing the sand away, you can finally lift it out without losing the fine hairs. The finer the work that you do getting it out, the more it's worth. But you'll notice that it has internodial lengths, kind of like a plant does or a bush, where it breaks out and breaks off. And that's usually a frequency indicator.
Yeah, it looks almost like the roots of a tree, man.
Exactly. That's why I look at a tree. Like charges repel, unlike charges attract. The ground is negative, the sky is positive, the tree grows up, but seeing as it's one charge, it spreads out. And according to its frequency, tells it how the, because every plant has a different harmonics of frequencies mixed, and that tells that plant how to grow in that direction and spread out because of its like charge. Tells how close the internodial lengths are and all of that. But it even helps in the growth of the leaves. And I had another thought on my mind. I guess I'll pass it back.
Well, I've done a little bit, but I've actually done quite a bit of research in static energy. But here recently, I've been using my friend Coltis's Bandograph generator and been doing some discharge test on there. And I have been able to take not only one single spark gap, but multiple spark gaps, and increase that energy around to literally charge up another coil, essentially. I'll have to do another video on it, but I did do a video, 9 volts, I think, was it? It might have been something else, I can't remember. I have to go back and look at my videos and see which one it was. But either way, I made a customized coil where the coil was literally a Tesla coil inside and out. The primary is inside the coil itself, and the secondary is on the outside. And I have been able to energize that using the static energy to get the same effect that I would be getting with the circuit that I would have used if I used a Slayer Exciter circuit or a Bug Zapper Fly Swatter circuit.
Right. So you're taking the positive and negative and running that in series. You're running that primary coil, and then in series with that, you're running like a real small spark gap, and then back over to the to the negative terminal of the MSRS device.
Because when you got a discharge of any type, you know, you got that wave that goes out, a magnetic wave or whatever you want to call it. See, I don't even want to argue
about
it.
It's conductive and not conductive in between the spark and all that. So you have AC and you're generating a magnetic AC wave. It might be a spike. It might be a sawtooth. It might, you know, it's not even square wave, but yeah. It's still AC, even though it's in one direction. It's pulsed DC in a way.
Yeah, and all you have
still
to do...
still wind up with the AC, and the secondary coil recognizes the magnetic fluctuations and is generated there.
There you go. See, when those lines of flux, whether they be mechanically, magnetically, electromagnetically created, or permanent magnet lines of flux, when they cross those copper wires... And inside my primary there's multi-strand copper wires, which is really good for your primary because you're getting actually more flow going through there because you got more surface area to deal with in a smaller compact area. And since this is all the way up inside the deal, I mean, it's pretty impressive how you can start off with little and come out with a lot more, and increase the voltage. And once you increase the voltage, you have increased the pressure, and therefore that pressure can actually do physical work. You know what I'm saying?
Right. You got say you got 10 turns on your primary, 1,000 turns on your secondary. You divide that together and it says 100. So whatever the voltage is on your primary, you can multiply it by 100.
Yep.
So that's the voltage, but your amps go in the opposite direction, though.
Well, that's fine. That's fine. Because at this point, we don't need them yet. We don't need them yet. Okay, and the reason
I do
why...
I believe there is a secret in that sparking, though.
Yeah, the reason why I deliberately do not measure or even count the turns on the Tesla coils because I'm trying to prove a point here. And I figured out another method by which to literally build a capacitor. I mean, these things are doggone dangerous, man. I shocked the living crud out of myself. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. But, I took some of that aluminum TIG wire that you use for welding.
Yeah.
And I literally wound a coil with that TIG wire. And the inside of the coil, keep in mind, just picture a Tesla coil using nothing but aluminum TIG wire. Now, as far as how you visualize electricity working, you know, that wire is not insulated. It pretty much all becomes one surface, but it basically doubles up, or maybe even quadruples the surface because of the, you know, the circumference of the wire itself. You're not using a flat sheet, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Right.
So anyway, on the I wound a coil, then I used a thin piece of plastic, such as the type of plastic that they would wrap, you know, a package from the toy store or whatever, you know, that you can see what's inside the box, but you don't. You know what I'm saying? Just plastic, right? And thick, clear plastic. And I wrapped that as my insulator between the plates. And then I used aluminum tape on the other side. And so there's a difference between the surface area of the coil and the surface area of the aluminum tape itself, where one is flat, the other one is the you know, the circle of the wire itself. And so that difference in potential right there seem to increase the strength of that capacitor. And like I said, I was only using small voltages in order to create a wave to send out and jumping it across spark gaps to charge that capacitor. And then you could watch as if I started this off on a slow speed, you could watch that every so often that I would get a real hard, heavy discharge across that capacitor. It would literally, you could see the spark going continuously that I was generating from the initial frequency. Once the capacitor got fully charged and couldn't hold anymore, it would discharge across that spark gap, and then you would watch that spark, literally, the brightness of it go 3 to 10 times brighter than it was initially from the initial energy that was being inputted, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Once that happened, you could see a physical difference in the light. When the fluorescent bulb was at the top of the coils, you could see the difference in the brightness of the light. Every single time that would have that surge, it would punch up a strong field up that primary, which in turn would energize that secondary and put yet even more high voltage up the coil. So this is why I'm saying that the spark gap makes a big difference. And as far as increasing that energy, you got a storage capacity in that capacitor, and if you can exceed that storage capacity in the capacitor, not enough to blow it up, but enough to get it to discharge itself real rapid, then now you have a stronger wave being punched into that primary coil. You see where I'm coming from? They already do it with...
You're saying get it up to its maximum and then discharge it at that point.
Yeah, drive it up to it right to the edge to where, if you didn't use that energy and kept pumping it in, it'd blow itself up or arc across itself. Instead, using that spark gap to be like the safety gap that would be on a Tesla coil for an overload. And so when that capacitor discharges, it will punch up a really strong wave, which will energize that primary, which will energize the secondary. A lot stronger than the initial energy that you used to put in initially. You can literally see a visible light difference in the color of the spark itself when this occurs.
Yeah, they say it's actually got a gain because of the spark and all that. It's like in the back of a TV, you got what is called a flyback capacitor. It's really high voltage, and as it bounces back, it gets amplified again, making a second half of the wave because of trying to discharge. And because of the flyback effect, it's actually a little bit... I'd say
bingo, you hit it, brother, because that's what's going on in there, because not all that energy can make it across that spark gap. Some of it actually bleeds back into the capacitor, which
right.
shortens the time that it takes to refill that capacitor, and so the energy potential that is continuing to come in will bump it out even quicker. So you'll watch.
So you only got to make half the wave, and that's why they call it a flyback capacitor.
Yeah. And,
or high voltage flyback altogether is what they call that.
So you can watch how you can hear it audibly as well. You know that there's an acoustic wave pressure going across that spark gap because you can hear it. All right, well, when that energy is being pushed into that capacitor and it discharges across, not all of that energy can make it across that gap, so it bleeds back into the capacitor. And so as the energy is coming in, you can literally hear the heavy-duty sparks speeding up, getting faster and faster the longer you run that thing, and the energy just keeps on increasing until it finally reaches its maximum potential.
Right.
It's incredible. I'm telling you, something as simple as a spark gap is in my mind going to be the key to free energy. If you're looking towards not getting the back EMF on there, then you need to not have a direct connection with that motor, because now that electron flow can literally go back into the same coil that you're trying to use to generate and start creating another field that acts as a brake, because a waveform can go side by side with a waveform. If you have a waveform going one direction that you're using to turn the motor or generator, and then it makes a complete circuit back around, now you got a waveform, because that energy is not at the same frequency because of the resistance of the load that you've got it under. When it comes back into it, it's at a different frequency. So it starts to create a second field side by side with the initial field that you were using to generate to begin with. And that's what we call back EMF, and it starts to slow down the armature, which makes it to where why they say you can't never get out more than you're putting in. What they haven't realized is that the energy coming back into it isn't the same frequency range as the energy that you just put out, like the 60 hertz that you put out. Once you put it under a load and you're using that 60 hertz going around the other side, that resistance is going to slow down that wave of the flow of electrons coming back in, the frequency that's actually making it back into the generator head is a different frequency than the frequency going on the opposite side. You see what I'm saying? Because now it's actually, instead of driving down a smooth road, you're driving down a gravel road. You see the difference?
Right.
So there's the key. So if you're jumping it across the spark gap, you're doing exactly the same thing as like the old mercury arc rectifiers, or even a diode for that matter. It only allows the energy to flow one direction. Well, it can't go back the other direction. The same thing with the spark gap. Some of the energy doesn't make it across the spark gap and flows back in, but it's not a case of it jumping back across the spark gap and then going in, because there's too much pressure going on. The energy flows in one direction. What do you think?
I think you're right.
So, what I'm proposing is that you build a high voltage generator head. There's so many different ways to do it, either the Van de Graaff style, the Wimshurst style, or the actual flux wind turbines that you do, that style. It doesn't matter how you do it, as long as you get that static charge and that pressure, you can leap across the spark gap and you can charge real time capacitors that you can in turn take that energy and then hook it to battery banks or inverters or whatever, and run the load, the inefficient appliances that we got right now. It's obvious you can't take these high voltage charges and run certain appliances, because you don't at that point have enough current flow, the watts and amps and all that. You don't have enough at that point to do what you need to do. But once you dump it into that capacitor, if you can think of a capacitor as a bucket or a swimming pool, once that swimming pool is filled up, now you have a whole lot of pressure, a whole lot of energy potential in that capacitor that then in turn can give you all the current flow that you need in order to run the other stuff. And the frequency range at which this high voltage is coming in is too high. It would literally burn up whatever you wanted to run, because it would have the electrons moving so incredibly fast that they would burn the coating off the wire. So too high a voltage, you can't use it because it'll do damage to your circuitry or your motor. Too low a voltage, you don't have enough pressure, so on and so forth.
Well, your voltage really doesn't matter on your motor. Basically, if you're going to put a higher voltage, you can't let it. It's the amount of amps that the wire can hold.
Yeah, but see, I'm not.
The voltage is the speed. The amperage is the amount of torque it can deliver it.
I'm only using the voltage to move the energy from point A to point B. I'm only using it as the skateboard under your wheels, you know, or under your feet, you know. I'm only using it to move that energy potential from point A to point B. That's all it's for. The frequency at which it's coming in will determine the speed at the other end. The pressure behind it will determine the pressure on the opposite side. So I'm literally taking and moving that energy, almost breaking it apart, not literally, but almost breaking it apart and moving it piece by piece over and filling up this capacitor. Now, once it's inside this capacitor, the energy potential and pressure that you have within that capacitor is way more than you need. If it's a sudden discharge on the opposite side, it can literally do some damage, such as, like I keep saying, an 800 microfarad capacitor will blow your thumb right off your hand. And you got to be really super careful around them.
Well, it depends on how much. That also depends on not just the voltage, but the amount of storage it's got in her.
Yeah.
Amps that hit you. It's the amps that hurt you, not the voltage. I mean, gosh, you touch your TV screen and you get that static or static from the doorknob. You're looking at 25,000. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're looking way over 25,000 volts. But as far as the motor goes, say you could take one of them 24-volt DC motors that come on the little scooters or something. You can put 120 volts to that sucker, but see, it's got a resistance in the windings. You got to bring that voltage up slower, but as long as the motor doesn't fly apart at the higher RPMs, which are 10 times higher than what it's, you know, set for to be used, and it's not drawing any amps. Now, when you start putting a load on the mechanical part of it, then the amps go up. And because of the low resistance in the wire, because it's made for 24 volts, that amperage is going to climb fast. And you got to be real careful not to blow it out. I just wanted to finish that point up.
Yeah.
When it's just spinning and freewheeling with no load on it, put just about any voltage to it as long as it doesn't arc over across the winding.
Well,
don't want to go so high, you know.
I literally burn up an electric motor with that. I talked about it in one of the videos I did because the frequency at which that energy was coming in, I mean, it just shorted it out inside. It fried it. All right. I took multiple different forms of energy. I took the Slayer exciter. I took the Van de Graaff generator. And I took the negative ion generator and a basic Tesla coil and even my bug zapper fly swatter. And I combined all this energy into one system. And it didn't matter that all these systems would interact with each other without interfering with each other. And I would get the same results out the other side while all these things were running simultaneously, which told me that you can put wave over wave over wave over wave and get the energy to move from point A to point B without interfering with each other.
Right.
And so the key is now that you've got this energy moving, how do you get it back into usable current? Well, there's several different ways to charge a capacitor. But the easiest way to charge a capacitor is a spark gap. Just that energy jumping across that gap will charge that capacitor. And once that capacitor is charged up, brother, I'm telling you what, you can put your thumb on a 9-volt battery, you're all right.
Be more specific. How are you wiring this up to collect the extra from the spark?
I'm using all these things sitting in the general vicinity with receiver coils in the middle of the deal, and every time I add one on the system, fire up the doggone Slayer exciter coil, the light gets bright. I put in the Bug Zapper Fly Swatter coil, the light gets even brighter. I put in the Van de Graaff coils and the discharge with the spark gaps, and the light gets even brighter. The more I'm adding all these separate frequencies in there, all you have to do in order to be able to light up a fluorescent bulb is be able to energize that gas at a high frequency. That's it. It's that simple. You know, you can rub your feet on the carpet and light up a fluorescent light bulb. You know, as far as energy-wise, it doesn't seem that doggone impressive. But the fact is, it doesn't matter which way you do it. It doesn't matter which form of frequency you use. you can still energize that same gas with the same method. You see what I'm trying to say here?
Because it's all light.
Well, regardless of whether it's all light or not, light, wind, water, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether it's magnetism or not magnetism or frequency, whatever. What matters is that at the other end of that spectrum there, whether it be light, magnetism, water, it all energy, doesn't matter how you look at it, all energy travels in waves at different speeds, at different pressures, and when it's all said and done, the work that you want to get done is done by moving that energy from point A to point B and utilizing that pressure on the other end to get your work done. You know, I made an example such as the wind blowing outside on the south end of my house, the wind blowing through the window, and then it moves my curtain, blow the paper off on the floor, it goes around the door, blows the curtain and stuff around in the other room and out the other side. I didn't create anything, I didn't destroy anything, I didn't change anything. The same amount of energy that came through that window on that side went through the one on the other side. The only difference in that energy that was whatever resistance it met on the way through, it changed the frequency momentarily and got some work done on the way through. You understand what I'm saying?
I had the microphone muted. Yeah, exactly. Same amount of volume comes in, same amount of volume comes out. One side has a little more pressure. That's the side where it comes in, usually, unless you got the other window closed more. The point where the resistance is the most is, in other words, the smallest window is dropping the energy more than the other one. But the total that goes comes in is the total that goes out.
Well, even light travels in waves. And so as much light comes in one side, it's going to go out the other side, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when these lights are coming in waves, we're seeing a certain spectrum, but we're not seeing all the spectrums. There's so many different spectrums of light, even light you can't see, you know? You couldn't see infrared. You know, there's certain cameras out there that can because of the way that they're made. But that infrared light spectrum's there nonetheless.
Yeah, the infrared is something there. See, you got an incandescent bulb. You say, well, what happens if I put a mirrored surface and keep all the light inside? Is it going to get brighter and brighter and brighter and burn out because it's being added to and nothing leaves anywhere? Well, in a way, it does build up and it does get brighter in there. But the thing is, when the light's not allowed to travel, it also changes its form and goes into infrared. And it heats up that foil or something that you put on the outside much hotter than the light bulb was made for.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it comes out. You wind up dissipating it in heat. Now, an incandescent bulb is more of a heater with a byproduct of light as compared to LEDs, which have that put off light, you know, and not much heat at all.
Well, and LEDs in themselves ought to be the whole, you can see it with your own two eyes with that deal, you know?
Well, that's the thing about the LEDs. Seeing as they don't create much heat, and you can tell they don't put up much heat because they're so small and they barely get warm, except some of these newer ones. They've got a heat sink on them. They'll put out some, but it's more efficient for more lower wattage LEDs than to one big LED, they say.
Yeah.
Because those have to have a heat sink up.
Well, that's some amazing
producing
technology.
Heat, you're taking away from your energy efficiency. Heat dissipation in watts is what you look for when you're going through an ECG manual for looking up electronic parts such as diodes or transistors. You look for the heat dissipation in watts on it so you know how much heat, how much wattage of a heat sink you need to put on there.
All right, and also I put a link in the chat room. There's a guy out there named Dutch Sense. I've been trying to get him on the doggone horn for a while and talk to him for a while, but he's too busy or whatever. But he did a video of I think it was Stone that put it in there. I have to look back and see. I don't remember who did it, but somebody posted the link about some battery stuff that he's doing with different materials that... you just have to go watch the video. It's talking about like the electronic Oh, crud. I can't remember what he said there. Anyway, it's different types of materials that you take, like copper and aluminum and carbon. There's all different of how...
Oh, you're talking about making the batteries with the vitamin pills.
Yeah, but there was a terminology he used that I wanted to mention because it falls in exactly with what we're talking about, how... You know, like the difference between copper and aluminum. There's an energy potential difference between the two of them, and so the flow of electricity goes from maybe the lowest to the highest, or vice versa. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I can't think of the word. So
either way, I put a comment.
They have different valence electron abilities and charges. One is more positive than the other. And you look down the chart and you find the two that are farthest apart to make the best battery.
I put a comment on there because his work that he's doing with that, and he's not normally into alternative energy stuff that research as far as I've known, ever since I've known him, but now that he's getting into it, it's pretty amazing. But either way, I told him in a comment that he needs to get a hold of Robert Murray Smith and match his research with Robert's research, and together they might, you know, be able to come up with some new ideas, because literally in this video he's talking about a battery that'll never go dry. You know, you'd have a battery that would last forever, pretty much.
That guy in the video, man, he was talking about it was your regular zinc vitamin. Zinc is zinc. And let's see, it was the carbon or activated charcoal, whichever you want to use. It's a dietary supplement to help with digestion. And magnesium tablets. Basically, just crush them up, mix them up, and insulate your copper from your aluminum, and press them together. And he was getting some nice voltage, half volt on each of them, but they were dry batteries. And that's what I thought was pretty cool.
Well, imagine the potential of a battery that, at the very least, could last 10 times longer than your normal battery. There's already a step towards free energy. Then you take that energy potential that is within that specific battery, and you use the technology that we're talking about today, which is literally taking your voltage and bringing it up to a really super high voltage and then dumping it across the spark gap down into capacitor banks. Now you've increased that energy potential off the deal. Now, you still can't argue that you're getting out more energy than you're putting in. You're not. All you're doing is changing the way that the energy is being moved from point A to point B, if you understand what I'm trying to say here.
Right.
So, is it the holy grail of electricity? It may very well be. Who knows? Either way, it's really good research combined with Robert Murray's research, and Coltis did a video here a while back, the bucking coil, and he's coming up with some pretty interesting results. I haven't heard any more back about his final conclusions on the deal, but I know that he's doing a lot of interesting research out there, so if you get the chance to go over and check out Desert Experiment on YouTube, do that. And there's other guys out there. Terry Woodruff's done some amazing work. Deeds has done some amazing work. And Ryan Abrams done some amazing work. Dieden, he's out there doing some work. Pretty cool stuff. Just keeping up with all these guys' research would be beneficial if you're interested in alternative energy, because these guys are basically, you know, they're stumbling onto it slowly but surely. They're stumbling onto the answers, and hopefully everybody together will get it. Hey, look, put this with that, and we got it. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Shoot, yeah, put it together. Same as I do my wind turbines. I look to see around what I have, and I check other people's ideas on how they build them, and I put my formulas and my theories together, and from that point, I'm obsessed to just go ahead and do it, and I like showing people what I do as I do it.
Well,
Ryan Abrams is pretty much the same way. he got into Tesla coils and building Tesla coils and researching with those, and he went far, fast,
Yeah, he told me.
I think he has built more Tesla coils than anybody by far, many times over, than anybody that I have known. While talking to him on Skype, you look around his house and it looks like the whole house looks like a museum. Because it's Abrams Lab Tesla art, and he likes doing art, and he builds them things. He likes to make them one size, another size, make them look cool. And he has a blast at it. Anything you enjoy, you will excel at, and he has definitely excelled. Yeah. And he thinks so. Terry Woodruff is the god of Tesla coils in a way, because that's where he's got most of his info. But even though they use the opposite circuits. One's using PNP and the other one's using NPN, but basically they do their experiments back and forth together and kind of like their own little virtual lab, you know what I mean?
Well, listen, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn or anything like that, but at one point Terry and Ryan both told me that they were inspired by my videos, which to me, that's amazing. I mean, you know, what I'm doing on there, but they have surpassed. They've taken that information and they have run with it so far past what I'm doing with the Tesla coil portions of it. And that's what I've been talking about all along, is take these ideas, make them your own, and run with them. And add to them. And continuously add to them. Because if I inspired Ryan in any way, and that's what he told me, that I inspired him to do what he's doing, that to me... It's not only an honor. I mean, it's awesome. It's awesome because I know that what I said didn't go, you know, to waste. Because I'm watching the work that he's done. He's done some amazing work. I mean, just flat out amazing work. And you know, if anybody hits the holy grail of free energy, it's going to be either Ryan or Deeds or Terry or the combination of all of them, or even us for that matter. If we keep doing what it is that we're doing, because. Taking all these things in conjunction and stepping back and look at the big picture, we know how energy travels. We know at the outcome of what it is what that we were going for to be able to run all the appliances that we've got. All I'm saying along the line, and I've got myself in trouble a few times because I don't have the high-tech terminology to explain what it is that I'm trying to say to folks. I think I'm doing a better job at it, but at the same sense, I don't want to argue over what energy is or how it was initially created or not created. What I'm trying to point out is that we see physically right now, without a doubt, what nature can do. And if you can tap into that energy flow as it's coming through without interfering whatsoever and get your work done, then you have exactly what the green energy folks have been looking for, clean, renewable energy that is not going to harm the environment. All you're doing is picking up a little bit of energy on the way through, saying thank you, nature, and turning your lights on and off. You know what I mean?
Yep. I'm glad you made a point there. I've had many people that told me they were inspired by what I taught and everything. I have many that have taken what I've done and taken it a few steps farther. I got people out there who've made like four permanent magnet rotor axial flux wind turbines with three stators in them and stuff like that. And one guy got into carbon props and basically went off into making the fiberglass props and forming them. And I've had people make a CNC machine trying to carve the props the way mine did. But it was with a router and stuff like that. And they tried to get me into that. And one guy in particular, Helmut Geiser, lives down near Cape Kennedy. I can't think of the name of the town down there in Florida. Shoot, he didn't know anything about electricity, but he was an engineer for structural. And he's got his own wind turbine company. He makes these big suckers, and every bit of it is stainless steel. And, I mean, they're huge. And he's got his own little system where it rotates and everything like that. He even wanted me to wind some coils for him. I just never could get everything together and the money and the time just right and figure all the jigs and stuff. But I did wind a couple coils for him, which he liked and enjoyed. But a little of the figures were slightly off, and we had to get back to it, and never got back to it. But yeah, I plan on taking a trip down there and visiting Helmuth. And if you're listening, Helmuth, a big muddy paw waving your way. So
well,
yeah, it's great to see that. And one of the things I saw was some guy down there in South Africa in a village that never had electricity before. He saw my videos. He duct tape, bale and wire, literally, old boards, and didn't even carve them, and found a ceiling fan, and took the induction ring out, found some magnets, and basically, you got a 24-hour radio pretty much as long as the wind's blowing, and a little light here and there. And he walked pretty much a round trip of 20 miles to get to the computer in the in the library in the town, far, you know, so far off from him, and then just to thank me. And he came back one more time where he borrowed a digital camera and took pictures of it. When I looked at it, I cried. I couldn't believe it.
That's amazing.
How many of your friends would walk that far just to thank you?
Don't know.
Yeah, that's what did it for me.
I put that link to the video I did, the simple coil driver in there, and it's a lot more important than maybe it might look to you at any given time, because what's going on inside there is essentially using something that it wasn't initially meant for to to essentially do the same thing that Tesla did with the knife switch, flipping it really fast. The same thing that the transistor does that you can do with like a buzzer coil or whatever. But it's something that's already off the shelf, so if you want to do some research on pulsing coils and stuff like that, and you can literally turn this thing up and down if you just add like a potentiometer between your battery or whatever, you know, turn it up and down, and you can use a variable capacitor on the opposite side to change the frequency range in there. So, you know, if you can get a hold of one of them old buzzer circuits, and it doesn't necessarily have to be that same brand. There's plenty of relays out there that have buzzers in them, you know, like the one when you leave your key in your ignition, it's got a buzzer in there. And when you run energy across that, it's going to open and close the circuit, so you could use the same deal to do. You could even use an old tattoo gun, you know, because that's essentially how a tattoo gun works. It's got a buzzer coil in it.
They make it with a relay.
Yeah.
The deal is not powering a circuit. It's when you... it's kind of like you turn your water on in your faucet and shut it off real quick, and the pipes just jiggle.
Yeah, they
real
rock.
Hard. It's the deal. The reason why he was up and down on the off and on the knife switch was basically make and break. The breaking the circuit is where you get your back EMF, and in that, when you have an actual spark, not shut off electronically, but an actual spark. There's more back EMF than there was originally placed into it.
Well,
that's where Tesla saw over unity, and that's why he kept doing it. He kept on trying to measure it and see it and check it out, and he found out that you could actually get more out of the recoil, as they call it, just like they named that flyback.
Yeah,
the recoil.
But also,
the magnetic field collapses. It has to go somewhere once you stop the current, and it goes back into the wire and pretty much in the same direction, and throws a harder pulse, and you collect that, stick that back into the capacitor. I don't know of anybody that's actually made over unity yet, but because there's resistances and all that other stuff that you have to overcome.
Well, I'm not looking...
But if it wasn't for resistances, a lot of these devices work on their own.
I'm not looking for over unity. I'm not even looking for zero point. It's a misnomer. It's a holy grail. If somebody finds it, more power to them. Not free energy has nothing to do with over unity or zero point. My point is this: that whenever that spark goes across there, depending on the intensity or whatever, you not just have the energy potential going across there, the pressure going across there, but now you also have a visible light spectrum as well going across there, plus an acoustic wave that's being created that you can audibly hear with your ears. So you started off with one form of energy and basically created at the very least three different forms of energy. Created may be the wrong word, but you can physically see three separate forms of energy being induced by this entire method. You see what I'm saying? You'll get the crack of the lightning. You'll get the flash of the lightning. You'll get the sound of the lightning. You see what I'm saying?
And you'll get the heat.
And the heat. So there's four. There's four right there. All in one shot with one method. Now,
they believe through the static electricity is where they're actually collecting neutrinos, which adds to it, which is free. So you're harnessing those as well.
Well, and if you got an open spark gap, you're interacting with the hydrogen and oxygen and nitrogen in the atmosphere. And how much of that are you pulling in, feeding that force on the way through?
Right.
So you know, there you go. If I was
You're not creating energy. You're just collecting it and redirecting it.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is,
with spark gap, you can collect even more.
But what I'm saying is, it's drawing in. You know, they talk about energy from the vacuum and so on and so forth. But it's drawing in energy as it's almost like an implosion as it's going through to the other side. How much of that energy actually makes it into the other side is neither here nor there to me. The fact of the matter is, you got that result, such as, you know, plasma being the fourth state of matter. You know, you got a solid, a liquid, and a gas. And if you energize in basically any of them, you can literally energize it into the plasma state, where you now not only have heat but visible light. And depending on how high the frequency is, you would have audible sound with plasma as well. I've heard Tesla coils, man. That they musical Tesla coils that are doing stuff like that.
Oh yeah, those are cool.
But
I think my favorite is listening to Super Mario Brothers on one.
Taking all
especially
that
when it's got a lot of bass.
Yeah. Taking all that in consideration, that you started off with one form of energy, you sent it through, whether it be an oscillator or whatever, or a solid state circuit of any type, whether it be mechanical or, you know, solid state with the transistors and resistors or whatever, and you change that form of energy, you sent it out, you know, across the spark gap, which then in turn determined how far apart that spark gap would change the frequency range on the opposite side, and then you dumped it into a capacitor bank, which then in turn that discharge off that capacitor bank through another spark gap literally pushed a huge magnetic field up that primary coil, which in turn sent the energy up the secondary coil, and determined on the surface area and the number of turns that you got on the secondary basically built up even more pressure, because now you're trying to push a massive amount of energy down a really thin tube, and then you get the sparks coming out of the top load on there.
Yeah.
So it's the travel from point A to point B.
A lot of this is achieved in high voltage, and that's the cool thing. So you got 20 ohms and you got one volt, man, you're going to wind up with milliamps. But if you got a lot of voltage, which doesn't really seem to affect the wire unless it breaks out due to the static wanting to jump across, dealing with high voltage instead, it's much easier. It goes past the resistance with much more ease, and you can get a lot more done with a high voltage. So
yeah, you can
set it. Your fuses are rated in amps, and they tend to blow when the cross sectional or the mass of that point where all the coulombs of electrons past a certain point in a certain amount of time is called amps, and if any resistance right there, it's going to heat up and blow. So a wire of a certain size can only hold so many amps, but it doesn't matter on the voltage. The voltage can go as far as it as, can go through that wire without a problem. It's only pressure. It's kind of like your garden hose. It's gonna fill up to maximum pressure. you can give it more and more. Now, if that hose isn't able to take that, then the hose will blow.
Well, that's why I give the swimming pool deal out there. Why I keep talking about the swimming pool, you know, a big tank, a huge tank circuit or whatever. If you got an ocean wave that's just strong enough just to kind of make it over a ledge and then start feeling up a pool at the bottom, it don't have as much energy potential as that single wave coming through there. But once that pressure is built up inside that tank, if you got a million-gallon tank on the other side, and it will take you a long time for the waves to finally fill that pool up, you can't use that energy as much as by the time that that pool is completely filled up and you put a drain plug on that. Now you're talking about a whole lot of current and flow, even pressure potential, trying to force that pressure, that massive amount of pressure on one side, down either a large tube or a big tube. There's where the trick is. That's the whole deal. And so if you can take these frequency ranges and you can pump them in there so incredibly fast that you can literally overload that doggone capacitor at such a rapid rate that if you didn't use that energy on the other side, or, you know, at least give it a path, a shorter path to go from terminal, you know, like on terminal to terminal. If that thing got so pressurized, it would literally leap across from terminal to terminal. And if it wasn't capable of leaping across from terminal to terminal, that capacitor would flat out blow up. And so by adjusting your spark gap closer distance than the actual distance between the terminal to terminal, you can reduce that chance of that thing ever blowing up, because now it'll take the least path of resistance, which is that spark gap. And you could charge this thing, overcharge it, and overcharge it continuously at such a rapid rate that now you have real time, on demand, you're filling these capacitors up faster than you can use them. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
There's the trick right there.
That's the thing on the hose, man. You turn your faucet on so it's slow. Sooner or later, that hose is going to fill up with the maximum pressure. Now, while that hose is full, you can squeeze that handle and shoot that water a long distance.
Yeah.
A lot of water comes out, and then it just goes down. Kind of like you found out with your wife.
Yeah.
You thought the hose was off, and you went,
is still pressurized.
You soaked her, and that hose flexed and came down, but it took a while for it to charge back up.
The look on her face was priceless, and the look on my face was priceless as I began to run for my dear life.
Yeah. Wonderful thing when the sweet honey bunny kissy lips is after you, isn't it?
And there's also another thing to factor in too, because I noticed that somebody put something in there down about John Hutchinson. The work that he was doing, you know, that had to do with frequencies and levitation and all that kind of stuff. You can literally manipulate things with static energy, and you can see this in a lot of the different deals that would determine which direction this like they use a piece of foil in between a couple cans, and they'll energize this with static electricity, and they'll go back and forth discharging on each other. But as I was doing these experiments with the Van de Graaff generator, I could literally see how, while this energy is being produced, that the copper wire and aluminum on there, they were sitting there dancing around, you know, literally almost floating in the area. Keep in mind, they were connected to something, but it was just like a coil of dangly wire hanging up there, and every time I'd turn that thing on, you could literally watch the motion, and you could watch the motion of the energy going through the wires, because all the wires on the deal were bouncing around from this energy. You see what I'm saying?
Great magnetic fields and static fields that interact with each other.
Yeah. And so, there's nobody who could convince me that, we've seen magnetic levitation. There's nobody that convinced me that it's not possible to literally manipulate mass and cause it to float, literally.
Right.
You know, filling up a balloon with helium, you know, it changes the difference inside the balloon as the difference outside the balloon. It's kind of like a bubble floating up in the water, you know. The same thing. And so if you could create a field around anything, you could get it to either attract to something or repel something. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. You said something a few minutes ago about free energy and over-unity not being the same thing. Well, they're not even close. They don't even refer to it. Well, they do. They're very close, but they are not the same thing. Same as you have clean energy, green energy, renewable energy, you know?
Well, when I talk about free energy, I want everybody to understand
that it's free. It doesn't cost you nothing other than the collection device that you get it. It's out there. It's the wind,
the light,
the sun,
the wind, the water, the earth, the thermal, all of that is energy.
Right, the water flow and all of that. Just the heat as well. You can, with the Fresnel lens, you're not creating more energy. It's not over unity, but it is free energy. It is clean energy. It's renewable energy.
It's you jumping in the boat on the river or the creek. The difference between the speed of that water going down that creek or the speed, the current flow of either one, how fast you're going to get from point A to B, how much work you can get in between. But you jumped on that river, it didn't cost you nothing for that energy to go from point A to point B. You jumped on a kite or an airplane, the kite, better example. You use the wind. You got work done. You flew from one point to the next using that kite. Yeah, and you didn't change nothing. All you did was tap into the energy that was already there. And that's
just like them guys out there surfing out there and got that stupid two-handled parachute type kite.
Yeah.
And I'm sicker they hit a wave and then jump up in the air. See one guy go way up there and the wind took him up and took him off, and then he started coming down. He was a long ways by the time he came down.
Well, with your example,
the grill, and then they got them guys with them sand buggies.
Before you go to the sand buggy, with your first example with them on the kite and the wave, there's two separate forms of energy at the very least going on. The pressure of that wave underneath their board is pushing them up. The pressure of the wind is pushing them over. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and the wind picks up that 250 pounds just like an elevator. I mean, you got a lot. That's a lot of energy. You go to pick up somebody. I mean, what? It's how many inches of height that you can take so much weight in a certain amount of time is basically your wattage. And it's the same thing. It's the same thing as horsepower. 746 watts per horsepower. And the wind has a lot of horsepower. One guy was up on a skyscraper, and well, not a skyscraper, but a building in Dallas. And this was years ago, and he picked up a board, a sheet of plywood, and he figured he'd carry it, and the wind picked him up. And he had it in the middle, and he rode that sucker all the way down. He went like pretty much a quarter mile and wound up finally landing in the middle of the freeway, and he almost got away, and he got hit, and it killed him. Other than that, he'd have died falling off that thing, but at least he got to fly before he crashed out for the eternity. But
well, you know,
that's a demonstration of the wind, and that's why you don't do roofing on windy days as well.
Something as simple as a parachute jumping out of an airplane with a parachute is prime example of using free energy, because the energy potential underneath that canopy that slows your descent down to the earth is still energy potential no matter how you look at it.
Right.
And determining on how windy that
is. The distance that he traveled before he made it down was all work. It was all energy, and it was all extracted from the wind.
And so what I'm proposing here is that we build a super high voltage generator, and it can be done on multiple different fronts. I feel like the Van de Graaff could be expanded on, the Wimshurst could be expanded on, the actual flux wind turbine could be expanded on. We're not trying to, in some sense, on this side, we're trying to redefine how energy is actually used. That's why we call it alternative energy. On the other side, We want to be able to use what we've already got, such as our TVs and computers, without blowing them up, and still be able to run our refrigerators and our heaters and toasters and so on and so forth. We can do that. All I'm talking about is how we get the energy from point A to point B to begin with. Right now, we use a brute force electromagnetic field or a permanent magnetic field to shake loose the electrons to create the electron flow in the wire, and I believe that it could be done much simpler. You could have a high voltage generator that will freewheel, won't even be underneath a load as it's sending its charge across there. You're not getting no back EMF that's causing that thing to bog down.
I got a question, and I also have a thought that keeps reoccurring in my mind, and I've been through extensive means of developing in my mind, it is basically in figuring it out and designing it. When you turn in that Wimshurst, because I don't know many people that have a Wimshurst device, and I've never had a chance to put my hands on one and play, but I got questions. The first question is, when you turn in that thing, does it start to get harder and harder to turn?
No. It stays the same. It stays the same.
What about when you put a load on it? Does it seem to...
Stays the same.
Stays the same. Well, that's a beautiful thing.
Because there's never...
So if we take several of these things and put them on the same axle, and we wire them all out in parallel, because if you go in series, basically you're just going to wind up with opposite charges that you should have put in parallel, and it's pretty much wasted. But put these in parallel, and come out to all the latent jars, and come out there, and before I go any farther... We know that we've collected off several of them, and they're all on the same shaft. The Wimshurst doesn't put out much at first until the static gets up, and then it multiplies on that, and when it starts getting higher and higher and higher, then it starts creating more and more and more. So my idea is to put all these in series on the same shaft, but wire them out in parallel so you can collect that high voltage with some amps.
Yeah, but you can expand
and in order
on
to keep
that.
But when it sparks, it discharges and it starts all over.
You can
why
expand
not
on
have,
that.
Why not have just a little high voltage multiplier to keep the voltage up at all times so it's creating maximum at all times?
Yeah, well, you can expand on what you was talking about earlier, because if you're talking about having...
But hang on, let me finish so you get the full idea. So you see this machine, and rather than discharging to zero and having to start over and waste so many turns, it can be putting out a maximum almost all the time because you have a small voltage generator at the beginning of it. It could be probably just a little Slayer exciter, doesn't matter, and rectified. But on the output of that, seeing as now we have so much current and a lot of voltage, we could take that and run that through a spark gap to a primary,
yep.
And then come out with all that voltage that you should have got by putting them in series, which is impossible to do.
All right, see if you can visualize this.
With current.
See if you can visualize this. 10 Vandegraaff, or 10 Wimshurst generators, which are 2 discs apiece. So you got 20 discs. 10 of them going one direction, 10 of them going in the opposite direction. On each set of these discs, you have a spark gap going to a capacitor. Each one of them has their own individual capacitor. Then from that capacitor, from each one of those capacitors, you have another spark gap, so that once that capacitor is completely charged up, when it's overcharged, it will discharge across the gap. Now you go from a single capacitor per set of discs to a series style capacitor, where now you're doing the voltage amplification that you're talking about.
Right.
Then in turn from that, each one of these, you take that series capacitor and you dump that load into a coil system across the spark gap, and now you have increased the voltage yet again, And you repeat that cycle one or two times, and by the time it gets through the other side, you literally have a system that is charging at such a rapid rate that it's just ludicrous, and at some point would get extremely dangerous, depending on how far you want to take it. But using your voltage multiplier that you're talking about, the single capacitor per set of disk on the Wimshurst generator, now you're taking...
Well, you got two. You got Leyden jars.
Leyden
one
jars.
One does the positive, one does the negative, so it acts as a total capacitor through the whole system. So yeah, you can call each one a battery, a high voltage battery, or a capacitor, so to speak.
And I'm gonna have to do a video on these new style capacitors that I've been working with, the ones that I talked about
earlier. Why are these in parallel, though? The one that you connect from one to the next one is going to, your negative is going to wind up being negative on the other one.
But see, here's the thing.
It's not going to be the positive, so you're just doing a flip-flop back and forth.
Here's the thing. The initial capacitors won't be, they'll be their own independent circuit all the way down the line. You got 10 sets of Wimshurst disk. That has its own capacitor that is not in connection with the second one in line, and that is not in connection with the third. None of these are going to be connected through the whole deal. They're going to be putting out their own independent energy into a capacitor bank, which in turn, independently, okay, all of them will be leaping across the spark gap into their own...
So each one charges its own capacitor.
That's right.
And all these capacitors are in series.
Yeah, each after the single capacitor, voltage multiplier setup that will run in series are being charged independently with each other. It never gets down to the point where they're all running in series with each other until you get to your final capacitor bank, which now you're dumping all this energy across spark gaps, multiple spark gaps, into that the one capacitor bank, the huge capacitor bank that's going to store up the energy that you're going to hook your inverters and such to.
In that case, at the output of each of the Wimshurst sections, you'd wind up having to have a coil in series with a spark gap and a secondary coil to absorb that.
Yep.
And therefore they are isolated. Other than that, if you're just running the charges straight over to capacitors, and you notice that the positive of one capacitor is connected to the negative of another capacitor, what it's going to wind up doing is going through that wire and back to the other side and doing exactly what I said on the other deal, and your capacitors, one will be charged positive, the other will be charged negative. Basically, if you go through your coil system and rectify that out to the capacitors, then they are their independent circuits without any connection between the two, other than the magnetic AC, which is rectified to put it all in one direction.
Yep. And the key...
You could do it that way.
The key to no energy feeding back into the actual disc themselves will be, like, whatever distance that your discs are apart, your spark gap will be less all the way down the line. And because the energy is going to take the least path to resistance, and it's going to jump across that gap. So if your spark gap on one side is wider and it's pumping all that energy, it will eventually feed back to the disc and arc across itself. So you want a shorter gap after the disc so that the energy will take the least resistant path and then work its way out towards the deal. So as farther you get away from that deal, you shorten that gap up enough to make sure that it can't go back in the other direction. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. But I was thinking minusing the inefficiencies due to everything like that. Basically, if you connect all the positives to all the positives and all the negatives to all the negatives and keep them separate and come over there with one spark gap, you have more amperage for that spark gap, even though your voltage is really high. And the voltage times your amps is going to be your power, and you can put it into one coil. You can put it in, or have these capacitors set up there to take them up, but your Leyden jars will do, because this will be constantly sparking, and it'll constantly be staying on the high voltage side, so it'll be generating max. But if you take these out and you put, like I said, wire them up in parallel, you skip a lot of inefficiencies, And that one spark gap is going to be one heck of a hot spark gap.
Yep.
It's going to be throwing a lot of current, so the voltage that you got off of each one is going to be pretty much the same and put in parallel out there, but you're going to have 10, you know, you're going to have 10 times the amperage, which is 10 times the power, and only one place to lose it. And with that big spark gap, you're going to get much larger flybacks. And you take that coil that you run that spark gap in series with, and which would be the Tesla coil one going out to the second one, you're going to have some high voltage coming off that Tesla coil with a lot of amps.
Well, and here's another thing about this whole process. When you're using these coils, and the stronger pulses these coils make, you can pick up radiant energy on the way by.
Shoot, yeah, why not?
And so, you know, if you want to totally get just totally ridiculous,
Deck, we could take
this,
one of them stupid. We could take one of those one of them carbon collectors that what's his name makes there, Robert Murray Smith. You take one of those and sit there and keep that on the thing as an extra sink in for the static voltage.
And so, if you want to get totally ludicrous about this whole deal, there's so many different methods by which you could actually use to turn these wheels. I mean, you could turn them by hand, you could turn them by wind power, you could turn them by water power, you could build you...
Not a single battery or magnet to buy.
You could build you a hydrogen cell that you could literally use the gas to run an internal combustion engine. And so, you know, you start it up manually or whatever, get you like a electric motor to spin that thing over, get it going real fast, and start building up a charge, which in turn is feeding back as hydrogen into the cell. Once this thing gets up and running, it'll keep producing the hydrogen while it's doing the other, and there are actually ways to pick up the energy hydrogen.
I'll tell you what, Mr. Shaziz, by gosh, old king, great one. If you take and you go ahead and build the assembly and get the Wimshurst all set up with bearings, so it's low deal here. I got a prop out here that you seen the Slurpee 104. That thing spins so fast. I'll donate that prop, so you can put it towards the wind at one end and let that sucker spin. It'll be dangerous. You might want to put something around it so that little blade. It spins like a lawnmower blade, dude.
I'm telling you, it'll
definitely do something with the Wimshurst device. Just look, whatever power is in that wind, I guarantee you're going to get more out. Because of the way it's set up, you're going to get more out and have one heck of a doggone Tesla coil output that you can do all sorts of things, power Atma motors or whatever.
Well, they've got
belts that basically dent the cans.
They've got fast chargers out there that'll charge batteries really fast. All right, and
charge
so
battery that bad.
If we just went with wind alone, and we had the right system set up, you wouldn't even have to worry about if it wasn't windy for a couple days, because you'd have enough storage capability in there to charge those capacitors super fast and run off of those battery banks until that doggone wind kicks up again.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you sat there and you get some 14-gauge wire and you run about 300 turns for the primary and maybe 30 turns or less turns for the secondary, which will have to be a nice fat wire, I'll guarantee that it will charge a battery, a 12-volt battery. So stepping it down gives you a lot more amps. And you're looking at a lot of high voltage.
Hey, you remember them flat
coils
that you made?
It's the same thing as 120 volts with one amp is 120 watts. And one volt with 120 amps is still 120 watts. So if you got a lot of voltage to spare, you can step it down and turn that into a lower voltage with a lot of amps.
You know those flat coils that you make for your actual flux wind turbines?
Yeah.
Now think about this for a second. What if you had, instead of just one set of coils on that thing, you had three sets of coils, and each one of these coils were different gauge wire, all the way down to the thinnest wire on the inside, and they were all sandwiched in together. you would literally be creating three separate frequency ranges at the same exact time with the same exact machine. You see what I'm talking about?
No, it wouldn't be frequency ranges. It it would be different voltages, though.
But different voltages is going to equate to different frequencies because of the pressure that's coming out of there. The high voltage
That's not the fact, Shaziz. The deal is the frequency on a wind turbine is. And what comes out of it doesn't matter the size of the wire. It matters how fast the magnetic flux changes. If I got 12 magnet positions, each rotation gives a full sine wave of six cycles per rotation. So the speed of the prop and multiplying times six per rotation. If I'm doing 120 RPM, multiply that times six, and that's going to be your frequency.
Okay, let's just say hypothetically then you just take three, instead of just you take the same gauge wire through all three of these coils. When I'm talking about using this energy, I'm not talking about till the point when it actually leaps across that gap.
And right.
The difference of the width of that gap will determine the frequency on the opposite side is what I'm trying to point out.
But you will get harmonics due to the EMF of the the frequency resonance of the coil. And if you're using a smaller wire, basically you wind up probably putting more turns on that one, so you got a different resistance, and it's still going to go the same frequency. Boy, but you're gonna have harmonics that ring through the wires, especially if you got a spark gap off.
All right. Well, either way, it's exciting. So we're down to the last 2 minutes of the show here, brother. According to my clock. And so, with that said, if you want to put a quick message in there before we roll up out of here and fire up the Hope Show, then. It's been a fascinating conversation, and thanks to you and Justin, all of us got some really good ideas. We could put these ideas together. We could take what we already know, and instead of disputing over the terminology that we use, we could actually use what we can physically see that nature already does, and therein lies the free energy. So, with that said, you got anything you want to say real quick?
Yeah, get your pen ready. Throw off a few YouTube channels here. Raymond Head is R-Head 100, all capital, all no spaces. R-Head 100, he deals with, he likes dealing with these dunking birds and all sorts of free energy, trying to get gravity out of pressurization from one side and sending the fluid to the other. He's got a gravitational machine which is called a dual oscillator, and basically that thing is huge. It's a pendulum. At one time he had the largest in the world. Some guy built one just to be smart, but really hasn't done much with it. It's just a little bit bigger. But he's got the largest one. Go check him out. That's R-Head 100. Then there's Desert Experimenter, which is Cultus Negrand. Desert Experimenter on YouTube. Then there's Terry Woodruff, like W-O-O-D-R-O-O-F, like a wooden roof. Terry Woodruff, and he's dealing with these with Tesla coils that put out. I've seen a picture of the guy shooting over 2 foot sparks out of all his fingers with his hands raised up in the air, and he's really conducting a bunch. Then there's Ryan Abrams at Abrams Lab Tesla Art. Abrams Lab Tesla Art. And check that out. He throws some pretty dramatic displays, and lots of things, lights from quite a distance, and many lights, very, very bright, with very little power. And then you got Robert Murray Smith, just like it sounds. Check him out on YouTube, and of course, this is, and you type Shaziz into YouTube and Muddy Muddy Mudman, M-U-D-D-Y-M-U-D-D-Y-M-U-D-D-M-A-N-N. Check me out on YouTube as well and learn all these things you're going to need to know for these end times and get your stuff together. A lot of times it doesn't cost much. Most of everybody we talked about right there does it next to free, doesn't really spend any money. So.
All right, with that said, peace and love. Stay tuned for the Hope Show, and hopefully you'll join us on the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central. Call in and join in and post links, talk in the chat rooms and all that stuff. Peace and love, everybody. Take care. You've been listening to Mad Science.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
21 gigawatts!